Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording at our studio here in East County. Today we open our show with breaking national news from Public News Service, including a congressional subpoena issued to Energy Secretary Rick Perry in the impeachment inquiry, outrage over power shutoffs across California during fire season, and more headline news. Hear how CAL FIRE is gearing up for wildfires during these extreme weather conditions, and what you can do to prevent sparking fires. We'll also have an update on power outages across much of San Diego's East County. Our newsmaker interviews today are with Lydia Van Notes from the San Diego Foundation and Lacey Cannon from Indigenous Regeneration. They'll be talking about grants through the Opening the Outdoors program in our region. And then on the second half of our show today, on Destination East County, we'll have all the top festivals and events coming up, from Laguna Mountain Rendezvous and fall festivities in our mountain region to Halloween happenings in several communities and a cultural arts expo coming up in El Cajon. On Crime Beat, hear about the arrest of a hit-and-run driver who left a Ramona CERT team member critically injured after striking her on her bicycle. We'll also have news about a fatal construction accident at Monta Vista High School and the passing of a major philanthropist in Borrego Springs. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for Friday, October 11th, 2019. I'm Mary Sherman. The latest developments in the impeachment inquiry. Energy Secretary Rick Perry and two associates of President Trump's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, were issued subpoenas Thursday by House investigators. The subpoenas seek key documents that have not been made available as part of the impeachment inquiry. The two associates, Lev Parnas and Igor Fruman, were arrested Wednesday night on campaign finance charges for allegedly scheming to funnel foreign money to U.S. politicians in a bid to affect U.S.-Ukraine relations. Also on Thursday, more Democratic House members came out in support of the impeachment inquiry. Now 230 are in favor, more than half of the House's members. An impeachment vote only needs a simple majority to pass in the House. President Trump is criticizing a Fox News poll that found more than half of U.S. voters want Trump removed from office, calling the network much different than it used to be in the good old days. And Trump's former top aide to Russia, Fiona Hill, will reportedly tell Congress that Giuliani and EU Ambassador Gordon Sondland circumvented the National Security Council and White House procedures for accessing Trump on Ukraine issues. Hill will appear before Congress next week. The Trump administration has approved a new regulation allowing states to include drug testing as a condition for anyone receiving unemployment benefits. Roz Brown reports it's getting some pushback.
Generally, workers can collect unemployment if they've lost their jobs by no fault of their own and meet other eligibility criteria. Michelle Evermore with the National Employment Law Project points out that the low unemployment rate means businesses already are paying less in unemployment benefits. She calls the regulation an expensive solution in search of a problem.
At the end of the day, what this rule is about is just making it harder to get benefits, and it's a not-so-subtle attack on the character of unemployed workers who, by definition, are involuntarily unemployed.
Evermore adds, if the economy cools down in states that implement drug testing, local business could suffer because every dollar spent during the height of a recession generates $1.60 in economic activity.
Farm workers groups are celebrating the end of at least a decade-long battle to ban a toxic pesticide in California after the state EPA announced a new deal with manufacturers of chlorpyrifos.
The pesticide will no longer be sold to growers in California after February 6, 2020. Naimin Martinez, director of the Central California Environmental Justice Network, says studies have linked chlorpyrifos to serious health effects in kids.
It's a very dangerous chemical that can cause harm, especially in brain development for unborn children and young children who live in close proximity where this pesticide is applied.
Chlorpyrifos is widely used to control pests on a variety of crops. The state has dedicated $5 million for grant money to search for an environmentally friendly alternative. I'm Suzanne Potter.
This is PNS. Large parts of California remain without power. On Thursday, the state's largest utility implemented the second phase of an intentional power cut, impacting some 600,000 customers. Pacific Gas and Electric said extreme winds forced the additional shutdown, which the utility organized to prevent equipment from sparking fires. New pork processing rules are raising food and worker safety concerns, and several labor unions have filed a federal lawsuit against the FDA. The plaintiffs say a key concern is a provision that removes maximum line speeds when bringing hogs to slaughter. Kim Vonderwall, who teaches in the University of Minnesota's Department of Veterinary Population Medicine, says it could open the door for the spread of viruses in the supply chain.
You could imagine if the carcasses are going by more quickly, we might not detect the same things that we would detect if it was going a bit slower.
The USDA says the changes are intended to modernize the pork processing system. Connecticut, Oregon, and Utah are being recognized this month for adopting six reforms recommended for ending the nationwide problem of rape kits that often go unprocessed for years. A list NACT with the Joyful Heart Foundation explains that processing rape kits is important not only to bring justice for survivors, but to prevent future assaults as well.
Every time a rape kit sits on the shelf, there's a potential for another person to be victimized by that offender. And all the while, the DNA to stop that person could be sitting in a box on a shelf.
By January of last year, the testing of backlogged rape kits nationwide had resulted in the identification of nearly 1,300 serial rapists. Now to North Carolina, where police in Wilson County are trying a new approach to lowering the incarceration rate, issuing citations instead of arrests.
Criminal justice reform advocates say this approach circumvents the cash bail system and prevents a host of harmful societal ripple effects. Don Blagrove of the North Carolina Justice Policy Center says rural areas across the country are struggling with high rates of imprisonment.
The largest populations that are being incarcerated are actually being incarcerated in rural counties. But Wilson has a disproportionately high incarceration rate.
Blagrove notes the change from lockups to citations has reduced the number of people in jail in Wilson County. She hopes the experiment can be a blueprint for police departments across the state. I'm Nadia Ramlagan.
Nearly 69 million Americans can expect to see an increase of 1.6% in Social Security benefits in 2020. The Social Security Administration announced the cost of living adjustment on Thursday, which amounts to about $24 a month more for the average retired worker. If you see one, decapitate it. That's the warning from Georgia wildlife officials for anyone who may come across a northern snakehead. The invasive fish species was spotted in a pond earlier this month and can exist out of water for days. Northern snakeheads have no natural predators in North America and have been reported in 14 states. I'm Mary Sherman for Public News Service, member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
CAL FIRE firefighters are staffed up and preparing for extreme fire weather forecasts across California. Chief Tom Porter, director of CAL FIRE, says, "With some of the most destructive and deadliest fires occurring October through December, we need Californians to not be complacent. Wind-driven fires move fast, and residents need to be ready to evacuate at a moment's notice in the event of a wildfire." Despite increased CAL FIRE staffing, he urges the public to remain vigilant and follow evacuation orders. Now is the time to make sure your family has emergency supplies and an evacuation plan. The tragic fires that occurred around this time last year should serve as a reminder for everyone to be ready for the unexpected. With extreme fire danger conditions, utility companies are shutting off power in many areas to reduce risks of electrical equipment sparking fires. Locally, over 28,000 residents of San Diego's East County received shutoff notices in recent days across many rural and mountain communities. Be prepared for power outages. Make sure your cell phone is charged and park your vehicles outside, or know how to open your garage door manually if you have an electric opener. Have a battery-powered radio and a battery or solar-powered phone charger. Consider getting a generator if you are in an area where outages are frequent, and notify SDG&E ahead of time if anyone in your family relies on electrically powered life support equipment. CAL FIRE urges everyone to exercise extreme caution when in or near the wildland or open areas to prevent sparking a fire. Don't mow or trim dry grass on windy days. Never pull your vehicle over in dry grass. Target shoot only in approved areas, use lead ammunition only, and never shoot at metal objects. Obey burn bans. Use campfires only in approved areas, and be sure to extinguish them completely. report any suspicious activities to prevent arson. To learn how you can be prepared for wildfires and evacuation steps, read readyforwildfire.org and preventwildfiresca.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gerald Stevenson.
As we're taping our show Friday afternoon, SDG&E has begun power outages in several rural and mountain communities in San Diego's East County, including Julian, the Descanso-Cuyamaca area, Pine Valley, Boulevard, Campo, and Hucumba. The utility warns that power could be shut off to over 17,000 customers due to high fire danger. SDG&E has opened resource centers in Descanso and Campo Friday for those who need to charge up cell phones or computers, as well as get water and snacks, and those are open until 6 p.m. Friday. Other resource centers may be opened soon if more areas are impacted. Now, you can get updates on planned outages and when the power may be restored in your area at sdge.com. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Around 450 Iraqi Americans gathered in El Cajon last week to stand in solidarity with demonstrators in Iraq after a brutal government crackdown on protesters in southern Iraq and Baghdad killed dozens. Since then, the death toll has reached over 100 and over 6,000 have been injured. Maryam Duj, a local Iraqi immigrant, says people are protesting because there isn't water, food, or electricity, and no jobs. Doctors and engineers have been sitting jobless for years. Now they shut off the internet. She hopes to see an end to what she calls a corrupt government in Iraq. Mina Abdelahad, another local protester, said she is speaking out because people in Iraq are dying. She showed us graphic photos on her cell phone sent from Iraq, a child with a gunshot wound, people carrying dead bodies, and protesters weeping over a dead one-year-old girl. The Iraqi ministry confirms over 100 deaths. Multiple media outlets also report that internet access, as well as social media and messaging apps used to organize the protests, have been blocked in much of the nation. According to some reports, the Iraqi military has opened live machine gun fire directly into crowds, but Fox News and Al Jazeera cite sources claiming Iranian security forces, not Iraqis, are responsible for much of the violence. Most of the unrest is in southern Iraq, while northern Kurdish regions and Sunni-majority areas in the west remain calm so far, the BBC reports. The U.S. invasion of Iraq to topple Saddam Hussein led to destabilization that created opportunities for ISIS to take over. Though ISIS has since been ousted from control, the region's problems are far from over, calling to mind former Secretary of State Colin Powell's remarks likening the Iraq situation to Pottery Barn. You break it, you buy it. 1 million people remain internally displaced in Iraq, while 6.7 million are in need of humanitarian assistance, according to the United Nations. Dr. Ayad Marcus was among the protesters in El Cajon. He told our reporter, "There is a revolution to change the government and policy in Iraq." Hazim Hussein, another Iraqi-American at the El Cajon event, says, "We're protesting here because there are a lot of young people in Iraq and the government over there is attacking them because they want opportunity and jobs." He adds, "They blocked the net, so there's no freedom. So the Iraqi community in San Diego is trying to support our brothers and sisters in our home country." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Jonathan Goetz.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Gene Carpenter with a Capitol Report. Congressman Duncan D. Hunter's criminal trial on campaign spending misconduct has been postponed 8 days at the request of his legal team and will now begin on January 22nd. That means the trial likely won't be finished when early voting begins the first week of February for the March 3rd primary election. Thus far, Hunter has insisted he won't resign his seat, despite 60 federal charges. Those include spending $250,000 in campaign money for personal use, including family vacations and trysts with mistresses, as well as false reports to cover up the diversion of funds. As long as he remains in the race, Hunter can legally use his campaign donors' money to pay his mounting legal bills. But if convicted, he could wind up in federal prison instead of returning to Congress, and he could face expulsion by the House of Representatives. He is currently prohibited from serving on committees, leaving his 50th congressional district with only limited representation while Hunter awaits trial. A poll conducted by SurveyUSA for the San Diego Union-Tribune shows Hunter headed for defeat if he actually files in December to run for re-election despite the pending corruption trial. The poll found that only 11% of voters say they would vote for Hunter in a field of 7 candidates. The PAC is led by Democrat Amar Campa-Najjar with 31%. Among Republican candidates, talk show host Carl DeMaio leads with 20%, followed by former Congressman Daryl Issa with 16%, and State Senator Brian Jones at 4%. Independent candidates Helen Horvath and David Ettick Jr. have 2% and 1% respectively, while 15% of voters polled said they are still undecided. Hunter has held the office for more than a decade, succeeding his father, Duncan Hunter Sr. His wife, Margaret, has pled guilty to one count of conspiracy and is now cooperating with prosecutors. Hunter insists he is innocent of the charges, which he has called a witch hunt by prosecutors.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. The San Diego Foundation's Opening the Outdoors program recently announced over $450,000 in grants for 13 programs working to increase access to the outdoors for thousands of young people and local residents, as well as improving 17,000 acres of natural land and 4 miles of trails across our region. Today, my very special guests are Lydia Van Note, she's the Director of Environmental Initiatives for the San Diego Foundation, and Lacey Cannon, Executive Director of Indigenous Regeneration, one of the grant recipients. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So, let's start by having you explain to me what made the San Diego Foundation decide to launch your Opening the Outdoors program.
Thank you, Miriam. That's an excellent question. The Opening the Outdoors program really came after we looked at a report, a study that we released that showed that there's 49% of green space in the San Diego County. But what more importantly, though, what we found is a significant amount of populations don't have access to this green space. So what you'll find is locations around the county that are very park wealthy, and then you'll also find areas that are park poor. So our aim is to actually use this program and partner with our donors, our local donors, and our partners in the community and help engage youth and families to seek access to the healing powers or the beautiful outdoor space in San Diego.
Yeah, that's so important. I know we were chatting before we came on the air, and even as a news editor, when we've taken some of our inner city interns out into the rural areas, the mountains, the deserts, it's pretty amazing just to see what a reaction they have and what an impact it makes for them to look out and sometimes see the Milky Way for the first time or pine trees. So it sounds like a great program that you're doing. Tell me when the Opening the Outdoors program started and about how much money has been granted through the years to how many different organizations.
So the program was started in 2010. And we've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars investing in engaging our communities and supporting nonprofit organizations that are helping to connect our communities and our youth and families to green spaces, to the outdoors, to the beach, to all the beautiful space that we have here in this region.
Wonderful.
Let's talk about how it benefits not just the individuals, the kids, but also the communities and the impact on climate change.
You know, first and foremost, I come in proud to work on this program, mainly because I understand personally the healing power of having a connection to the outdoors, whether it's standing in the sun, sitting under a tree, or putting my feet in the sand and letting the waves wash over them. That gives us a connection to our community and to our world. So when I think about addressing climate change, it can be overwhelming. However, if I continue to have these connections with my world, with my community, this gives me an inspiration. This gives me the motivation to continue to fight and protect not only humanity, but also the world that we live in.
Yeah, I think it also helps when we have more and more people exposed to nature, and then they develop an appreciation for it. And then presumably there would be more support for things like planting trees and reducing our carbon footprint, but certainly there's a lot we can do right here in our own community. Now, you mentioned health benefits, and there's some new studies actually showing the healing power of nature, and in fact, more and more doctors are now beginning to prescribe that patients who are stressed get outdoors and enjoy nature.
That's an excellent comment. Yes, we have seen more and more doctors literally prescribing to go outside and go for a hike or, you know, just sit out in your backyard and listen to the birds. To me, though, is I don't think that we really need doctors to tell us that. I think if we all just take a moment and think about how we feel when we're sitting outside and appreciating that feeling that we have and understanding that not everybody has that access, I think that we will all come to the conclusion that we want to continue to support all communities to be able to have access to all of the beautiful land and species that we have here in the region.
Yeah, San Diego, a lot of people don't know, but it's one of the most biodiverse regions around. I believe it's the most biodiverse county in America, I've heard.
That is what I've heard, too.
A wildlife biologist actually told me that recently, so that's a pretty impressive statistic. Another thing is the economic aspects. So often when we talk about whether a piece of land should be saved, preserved in its natural state, or developed, you know, there's arguments for the economic development side of it. But I know in places like Costa Rica, for example, they've been restoring the rainforest and building an economy based around ecotourism. But I saw something in your presentation notes that indicated there are some economic benefits right here in San Diego County also to these programs that you're supporting.
Absolutely. As you know, you live in the region. We all very much value the diversity and the spaces that we have available to us. We also have a very large tourist industry that comes and enjoys this beautiful land and this beautiful space with us. And even down to the micro level, what we can also even see is that when you have parks or green spaces located in neighborhoods, not only are people happier and healthier because they're outside, but they also see an additional increase in the value of their homes.
Yeah, I would imagine, too, with the press for more housing, but not wanting them built out in the remote areas where they're bulldozing the land and then building freeways to get to them. If the inner city neighborhoods have parks and things, then it makes it a more desirable place where people would want to live and raise their children, I would think. Lacey, can you tell us about Indigenous Regeneration and what your organization is all about?
Yes, thank you. Indigenous Regeneration was formed by a group of activists, musicians, and tribal members from the San Diego community. We formed to support our Native communities with resources and to create environmental impacts on our reservations to really help each tribe become truly sovereign and less government dependent.
Wonderful. And a lot of people don't know we have more Native American tribes in San Diego County, too, than any other county in America.
This is true.
Yeah, 18 or 19. Tell us about the specific grant funding that you got from San Diego Foundation through their Opening the Outdoors program and how that money will be used to benefit the tribal members.
Thank you. Yes, we've been so blessed by the San Diego Foundation to be in our second year of funding on some of our projects on the San Pascual Indian Reservation. Our main project is a 6-acre educational campus that teaches on food, medicine, and eco-building. And the funding from the San Diego Foundation has gone to support our programming that allows for youth from multiple reservations to come spend time in the outdoors with us while they learn about all of these systems within our ecosystem in San Diego.
That's great to hear. Now, I understand you have some other projects going. Tell us about your food forest.
We do. We have an 11-acre Kumeyaay food forest that we'll be installing this fall. It's on the San Pascual Indian Reservation by our cultural department, and we're reforesting 11 acres with edible plants that not only allow the area to be more fire resistant, but they also provide walking trails with educational signs that allows our community to freely forage there.
Wow, that sounds like an amazing project. We could use that everywhere, I think. Wow, that sounds like an amazing project. We could use that everywhere, I think.
Yes, one of our facets of what we do is we teach eco-building. So this is where we focus on housing alternatives for our reservations, of using natural materials that we can source from our reservations that have a lower impact on the environment and a lower cost point to be able to produce the homes. So we teach this technology and are opening a campus in partnership with some local colleges to create an accredited two-year program in environmental building science. Our second-year students will be providing housing on reservations through the learning process and hands-on site work.
Very impressive. Now, you've mentioned that these programs currently are all at the San Pasqual Indian Reservation. Do you have plans to eventually expand that and bring it to more of the tribal lands here in San Diego County?
Absolutely. On multiple levels, we currently do and plan to expand. We currently serve 9 tribes through the Indian Health Council Consortium, as well as all tribes in San Diego. So we have participants come from all reservations to our location. But long term, we would love to work with each tribe to create a matayum or a gathering space where we can travel around and share these technologies from tribe to tribe.
I'd love to come visit up there sometime and take a tour and take a look at what you're doing.
Please do. We always need help pulling weeds.
Okay. Lydia, what are some of the other programs that you've funded through the Opening the Outdoors program at San Diego Foundation?
We've funded a series of programs. I think my favorite one has been a program that is called Urban Surf for Kids. And basically, it supports programs that take children who have never been to the beach or don't have easy access to the beach and brings them and teaches them how to surf.
What a kick. You know, I went along years ago on a similar program where they took a bunch of Kumeyaay kids, many of whom had never seen the beach before. They took them to the aquarium at Scripps and then gave them surfing lessons. And it was really something to see the joy on their faces.
Who in this room knows that the La Jolla Shores is the creation story birthplace of the Kumeyaay Nation? Kumeyaay means people of the bluffs.
Fascinating.
Pretty much Muir College campus sits on the village site and the preserve there on the shore, and the Scripps oceanography is the original village of the Kumeyaay.
Wow.
I think one of the most powerful things that I saw is it really teaches children to overcome an anxiety that they have or to really feel how to become a leader. And being scared about getting on a surfboard and jumping on a wave and having somebody there to support them in that action, I think really teaches them that they have support within their community and they can grow as a leader in the future.
Now let's talk about some of the programs you're doing that will have an impact right here in East County. For instance, I understand you funded San Diego River Park Foundation for a project in El Cajon. Tell us about that.
Absolutely. The San Diego River Park Foundation is a great project. The grant that we supported through the Opening the Outdoors program at the San Diego Foundation was to help decrease barriers to nature for the immigrant and refugee population there in El Cajon. What this actually does is really supports communities going into nature and feeling support from their community and having access to their community as well.
So I see this is going to include a multilingual map of the Forester Creek watershed, which is great. So it'll be what, Spanish and Arabic?
Absolutely, yes. There's going to be multiple languages that will interpret and then also educate everyone, the visitors, on the importance of that watershed. Learning about watersheds and the importance of water and how water flows through our region is very important to most San Diegans, but also as we continue to see the effects of climate change within our region, water and water is going to be more important, and the management of our water systems are going to become more and more important.
Absolutely. I'm just going to read off a few of the other names here of some of these, and if people want to learn more, I'm sure they can go to your website and read about it, but you're doing something with the San Diego Canyonlands. What's that all about?
So the San Diego Canyonlands is one of the programs that they run with the support of the Opening the Outdoors program, is to help build trails that allow access into special lands that are also preserved.
And then there's a Nature Collective with the Escondido Union School District helping kids engage with the outdoors up there through a summer camp and teen mentorship program. There's San Diego Children in Nature. That's a collaborative program with some of the public libraries.
Thank you. Yes, I think you're highlighting a perfect theme, and that we really, a goal of the program is to really ensure that we are engaging all of our community, particularly the communities that are disenfranchised or are not necessarily represented And so really to engage those communities, help them have access to the beautiful resources that we have in the region.
That's great. And we don't have time to go through them all right now, but there's certainly some in the South Bay, in North County, others here in East County, Choyas Creek, which is Lemon Grove area.
Correct. Okay. Choyas Creek is actually a very large watershed. You can even come up to Lemon Grove. Yes, all of those programs are really multifaceted, but very focused on making sure that we are protecting and cleaning our watersheds, but also ensuring that our youth and our families have access, all youth and all families have access to these beautiful spaces.
Excellent. Now, besides your opening the outdoors program, Lydia, what are some of the other ways that the San Diego Foundation is out there supporting nonprofit groups and strengthening our community?
So the environmental initiative of the San Diego Foundation started well over a decade ago, and it has grown significantly throughout the last decade. And there's two major program areas, and one is climate change focused, and the other one is opening the outdoors program. So the climate change initiatives focus on trying to find solutions, local solutions to addressing climate change. And we've talked a lot about opening the outdoors, but we also spend, within that program, we focus on engaging our public and beautifying and creating access to our beautiful spaces around the region.
Lacey, speaking of climate change, I understand that the tribes are involved in a very ambitious tree planting program, which really shows what we can all do at a local or a community level, beyond whatever is happening at the national or international level. Tell us about that.
Yes, thank you. We're really excited about a lot of projects that we're currently taking part in. A lot of the funding from the San Diego Foundation has helped us fund our projects to be able to leverage them for bigger and broader projects with our youth. One we're really excited about right now is a project with Chutescot Martinez to plant a trillion trees in 10 years.
Wow.
So part of helping with that in looking at carbon sequestration for San Diego County is planting with drones. And so we're actually launching out a program right now. We're starting on the San Pascual Reservation on 533 acres. But we're rolling out at this year's EPA Tribal Conference that serves 48 tribes in the Southwest region. And we're recruiting tribes to participate in a res forestation project where we'll be engaging their youth in drone training and reforestation planning of each reservation. We'll be shooting out of the drones native plants that are also edible and fire resistant for San Diego County.
That is amazing. Wow. Hopefully that's an idea that'll catch on some other places.
Yes, we're hoping actually that all tribes in the United States will join the program and that we'll be able to reforest each reservation, making a big dent in the trillion trees and also partaking in a lot of carbon sequestration and having a large environmental impact in the country.
Super. And who knows how far that could go? Other communities outside of the Native American reservations or maybe our national forests or state forests could someday do the same thing.
Absolutely. Our hope is that by doing it on tribal lands, it will really push the counties to be able to go in and also make agreements to do that within our cities and our counties and our pretty much the entire country. And we would love to see that the U.S. Forest Service possibly could adopt the drone planting technologies for after wildfires to get the native plants plugged in right away.
Yeah, who knows, maybe someday we'll see the idea that started here happening all over the world.
Do you have goals on what you might be focusing on next with the next round of grants coming up?
That's an excellent question. We're really looking at this point in time, trying to find other opportunities on the national level to bring in more funds, to partner with our donors here locally to help address watershed issues, water issues, and help move the local leadership into a focus on resiliency when dealing with the effects of climate change.
Very good. If people listening out there want to support your efforts, get involved, volunteer, maybe be a donor, how can they get in touch and learn more information about the San Diego Foundation and your Opening the Outdoors program?
Thank you. I think the best first step is to go to sdfoundation.org, and you can find the Climate and Opening the Outdoors programs there. And you can also find my contact information, and I would love to help anyone learn more about these programs.
Very good. And Lacey, how about the Indigenous Regeneration organization that you have? Where can people get more information on that?
Thank you. Yes, you can visit our website at indigenousregeneration.org. We also have an active Facebook and Instagram page.
Listeners, if you just tuned in, we have been speaking today with Lydia Van Note. She's the Director of Environmental Initiatives for the San Diego Foundation, and Lacey Cannon, Executive Director of Indigenous Regeneration, one of the grant recipients through the San Diego Foundation's Opening the Outdoors program. I'm going to give each of you the final word today. Let's start with you, Lacey. What else would you like people to know about the Indigenous Regeneration program and the people that you serve?
Thank you. Well, I'd like to take a shift from our organization and just say that we would love for everyone to know that we really appreciate the work that the San Diego Foundation does to open up the outdoors to underserved communities. And as someone who is married into the Kumeyaay Nation for 15 years, and I have children that are Kumeyaay and a husband who is Kumeyaay, their origin story is at the La Jolla shores, and so access to the beach is very important to us. So we appreciate any of these programs that work in with the water as well. We believe that this is our origin place, so that our roots began here and that it was 14,000 years ago, if not longer, that the Kumeyaay Nation came out of the water here.
Lydia, I'll let you have the final word. Tell us what else you would like our listeners to know about the San Diego Foundation.
Well, I think I just want to thank Lacey for joining me today and telling their story. There's so many more stories of people and communities in our broader region that need support and should have support in order to access these lands, but also to be a part of our overall community. And I just want to thank you for joining me.
I'd like to thank both of you for taking the time to join us here today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Rebecca Williamson
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This week's Destination East County features the Laguna Mountain Rendezvous, Matilda the Musical in Spring Valley, a production of On Golden Pond in La Mesa, a chamber music series at Cuyamaca College, Fall at the Farm in Julian, Ms. Smarty Plants Goes Batty at the Water Conservation Garden, a Fair Trade Gift Fair in La Mesa, concerts at the Magnolia Center, and the Julian Autumn Jubilee.
Plus, we have a preview of coming events, including the Borrego Days Festival and Parade, Pints for the Park, a Green Homes Tour, Haunt Fest on Main in El Cajon, costume contests for people and pets at Bates Nut Farm, spooky campovers at Lake Jennings and at Lions, Tigers, and Bears, Trunk or Treat in El Cajon, a cultural arts expo in El Cajon, and the Mother Goose Parade.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
You're invited to step back in time at the Laguna Mountain Rendezvous, an authentic Rocky Mountain fur traders encampment from the early 1800s. Relive this historic past with demonstrations of primitive survival skills such as tool making, cooking, tomahawk throwing, archery, and black powder target shooting. Also enjoy music and more. You can also buy a medallion and earn a chance to win a bronze mountain man statue that is a reproduction of the original by artist Frederick Remington. Campers with primitive period style gear and clothing are also welcome to participate. Find details, directions, and registration forms at LagunaMountainRendezvous.com. That's RENDEZVOUS.
Young Actors Theater presents Matilda, the musical, at the Encore Theater in Spring Valley. The musical opened October 10th and continues through October 27th. Inspired by the book by author Roald Dahl, the Tony Award-winning Matilda the Musical from the Royal Shakespeare Company revels in the anarchy of childhood, the power of imagination, and the inspiring story of a girl who dreams of a better life. Matilda has won 47 international awards and continues to thrill sold-out audiences of all ages around the world. For tickets, you can visit YATSanDiego.org.
Lamplighters Theater in La Mesa presents On Golden Pond, October 11th through November 10th. The play's plot features on aging couple Ethel and Norman Thayer, who spend each summer at their home on a lake called Golden Pond. Through the years, they are visited by their daughter with her fiancé and his son. The play explores the often turbulent relationship the young woman shared with her father growing up, and the difficulties faced by a couple in the twilight years of a long marriage.
The Echo Chamber Music Series hosts 14 concerts at Cuyamaca College's Performing Arts Theater this season, featuring classical music performers such as Jason Vuur, Bach Collegium, the Dolly Quartet, members of the San Diego Symphony, and other internationally acclaimed musicians who have performed across the globe. The season runs from fall of this year through June 4th of next year. Find a full list of performers and ticket information at echochambermusic.org.
Julian Farm and Orchard invites you to Fall at the Farm each weekend now through October 31st from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. The fun includes hay rides, apple cider pressing, a pumpkin patch, farm animals, berry, and apple picking. You can also see an apple pie making demonstration or try your hand at archery, candle dipping, or axe throwing. There's also a seasonal farm store featuring country wares and more. You can find more information at julianminingcompany.com. And click on the You Pick link to find activities at Julian Farm and Orchard, under the same family ownership as the Julian Mining Company.
Are you ready to have fun and learn about creatures who go boo in the night? The Water Conservation Garden at Cuyamaca College invites you to don your Halloween costume for Ms. Smarty Plants Goes Batty on October 12th from 5:30 to 8 p.m. This event features a Ms. Smarty Plants show, trick-or-treat trails, and creepy critter encounters for a spooktacular good time. For tickets, visit www.thegarden.org.
Just in time for holiday shopping, La Mesa Fair Trade will host a gift fair on Sunday, October 13th from 8 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. at St. Martin of Tours Parish Hall in La Mesa. The event features sales of handcrafted fair trade gifts, home decor, clothing, and jewelry through a variety of vendors. There will also be fair trade coffee, teas, ice cream, and chocolate to savor. The goal of fair trade is to assure fair wages to create brighter futures for families in developing countries. For more information, you can call 619-466-3241.
Vocalist Lily Palmer has performed in concert at performing arts centers across the region and at the Old Globe Theater. Next up, she'll be singing at Mission Trails Church, located at 4880 Zion Avenue, in San Diego, near Kaiser Hospital, on October 13th from 3 to 4 p.m. She began her vocal study at age 15, beginning with classical music. She then moved on to a musical theater and discovered her passion for American popular music. Now she sings jazz, swing, Latin, and music from the Great American Songbook. Her concert is part of the Second Sunday's concert series, held each month at the Mission Trails Church.
Fort Cross Old Timey Adventures will host its Julian Autumn Jubilee each weekend in October. Fort Cross is located on Highway 78 in Santa Isabel, just outside of Julian. Hours are Saturdays 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Sundays 11:15 a.m. to 5 p.m. All are welcome to enjoy visiting the You Pick Pumpkin Patch. Additional activities are available for a fee and packages are available. Options include cider pressing and tasting, mini pumpkin painting, a petting zoo, reptile show, hayride, hoedown, candle making, tire swings, archery, tomahawk throwing, and paintballs at the Ghost Town Slingshot Range. Guests are welcome to bring a picnic lunch to enjoy with views of Volcan Mountain. You can find more information at fortcross.com.
The Magnolia Center, formerly known as the East County Performing Arts Center, has a full season of stellar entertainment lined up. Concerts coming up in the last half of October are Triple Grammy Award winner Bruce Hornsby, who formerly performed with the Grateful Dead and his band The Noisemakers, The Taj Express, Master Chef Jr., Latin American singer Leo Dan, Grammy Award-winning singers Pat Benatar and Neil Giraldo, the legendary singer Engelbert Humperdinck, and progressive metal band Dream Theater. For tickets and the full lineup, visit MagnoliaSanDiego.com or The Magnolia on Facebook.
The 52nd Annual Borrego Days Desert Festival in Borrego Springs will be held Friday, through Sunday, October 18th through the 20th. This year's theme is Bloom in Borrego. The Borrego Days Parade will roll out at 10 a.m. on Saturday, October 18th, including a multi-plane flyover before the parade begins. The parade itself features floats, Western trick-riding cowboys and their horses, marching bands, plus classic cars with the Borrego Springs queens and princesses. At Christmas Circle, you can visit booths offering artwork, handmade goods, crafts, and foods. There's also a carnival fun zone for kids, and for adults, a beer garden and live music to dance into the sunset and under the clear, starry night sky. For more information, visit borregodays.com.
And the Borrego Foundation is kicking off the fall season with its fourth annual Pints for the Park as part of Borrego Days on Saturday, October 19th from 5 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. The event includes tastes from microbreweries, live music and food from Carmelita's Mexican Grill and Cantina, all to benefit the foundation which supports California's largest state park, the Anza Borrego Desert State Park. The event will be held at the mall in Borrego Springs, and tickets are available at theabf.org.
The San Diego Green Building Council, a nonprofit organization promoting sustainable building and community practices in San Diego, will host its 10th annual Green Homes Tour on Saturday, October 19th and Sunday, October 20th. The tour has been expanded this year to 2 full days, showcasing a diverse collection of the most innovative, eco-friendly homes in our region. Saturday will include homes in Central San Diego, East County, and South County. Sunday will focus on homes in North County. Find more information at sdgreenhomestour.org.
HauntFest in downtown El Cajon is expected to draw around 40,000 visitors on Friday, October 25th from 5 to 10 p.m. The 8th annual HauntFest includes live music on two stages, costume contests on the main street stage, expanded carnival rides and games, candy challenge activities in Kids Zone, face painting, performances by TNT dancers, and the Arts in Motion crew and junior crew. There's also the St. Madeline Sophie's Center pumpkin patch, craft and game booths, an LED rock wall, inflatable jumps for kids, showings of the first two Harry Potter movies, and more. For more haunting details, go to hauntfest.org.
Bates Nut Farm in Valley Center has Halloween-themed events coming up, including a Halloween doggy costume contest and parade on October 26th, and then a costume contest and parade for people on October 27th. Guests can also enjoy music, food, and more. For more information on these and other events, you can visit batesnutfarm.biz.
Spooky stories and s'mores, campsite trick-or-treating, creepy crafts, and a campsite decorating contest are all part of Spooky Camp-Oween at Lake Jennings the last two weekends in October. The grand prize in the costume contest is a camping weekend at the lake, complete with boat rental and fishing permits. For a full schedule of Spooky Camp-Oween events, activities, and reservations, you can visit lakejennings.org.
You're invited to pack your camping gear for a wild and ghoulish overnight adventure at Lions, Tigers, and Bears Animal Sanctuary in Alpine on Friday night, October 25th, and Saturday morning, October 26th. Camp under the stars alongside the rescued exotic animals, all in their secured habitats. The fun begins Friday evening with pumpkin carving, campfire songs, s'mores, and hot cocoa, plus an animal trivia challenge. On Sunday morning, join in a costume contest and watch the animals enjoy their stuffed pumpkin treats during the 10 a.m. Pumpkin Bash. Bring camping gear including tent, sleeping bag, flashlight or lantern, warm clothes and shoes, dinner, snacks, and breakfast foods, and a pumpkin or two to carve, plus a costume. Guests must be age 3 or older for this event. For tickets, visit lionstigersandbears.org.
El Cajon's Classic Cruise Nights ends its season October 30th with Trunk or Treat, including music, treats, and a full street closure along Main Street in the heart of downtown El Cajon. For more information, you can visit downtownelcajon.com.
You're invited to discover local and international artists at the 2019 Cultural Art Expo on Saturday, November 9th, from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. at the Marriott in downtown El Cajon. Guests can enjoy live music by the Jazilla Band, a local Latin jazz legend. Savor food samples from 12 to 2 p.m., visit a wine and beer garden, and enjoy artworks including adobe sculptures by Enrique Aviles from Mexico City, fish carving sculptures by award winner Bob Berry, works by local artist Grace Schleiser, plus workshops by local artist Barbara Young, and more. You can stop by East County Magazine's booth at the Cultural Art Expo to meet local authors, artists, and our editor. This year, the event also draws inspiration from the Don't Give Up movement, which strives to help struggling people find hope and prevent suicides. The event also honors the memory of local artist Nolan, who died at age 18. For tickets and details, you can visit artexpo@themarriott.com.
The Mother Goose Parade has been delighting children and families for 73 years. This year, the parade will roll out through downtown El Cajon on Sunday, November 24th, starting at 1 p.m. The parade features an array of floats, marching bands, equestrians, clowns, local celebrities, and Santa Claus to welcome in the start of the holiday season. You can find the route and details at mothergooseparade.org.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more in the calendar and events section at our website, eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back soon with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Jonathan Getz with the Crime Beat Report. California Highway Patrol today has arrested Chase Richard of Ramona for allegedly hitting and seriously injuring a bicyclist while driving an SUV with stolen license plates, then fleeing the scene. The accident occurred the morning of October 2nd on State Route 67 north of Dye Road in Ramona. Witnesses said the SUV drove away with the bicycle embedded in the vehicle's front grille. Bystanders stopped to render aid to Michelle Scott, the cyclist who suffered a serious head injury and remains hospitalized. An anonymous donor offered a $25,000 reward for information leading to an arrest in the case. Officer Jeff Christie says the CHP thanks the public for assistance locating both the SUV and the suspect. The victim, Michelle Scott, is a volunteer in Ramona's Community Emergency Response Team, who has helped local residents during emergencies. A GoFundMe page has been set up to help Michelle and her husband Don pay for her medical expenses.
A construction worker has died after an industrial accident Wednesday at Monte Vista High School in Spring Valley. The worker fell 30 feet off a beam just hours after the topping off of the school's new multi-use facility. Deputies and fire department personnel performed CPR and first aid, then transported the victim to Grossmont Hospital, where he was declared dead on arrival, says Sergeant Matt Cook with the Sheriff's Department. The San Diego Union-Tribune reports that a second worker suffered minor injuries. Cal OSHA is conducting an investigation into the cause of the fatal accident. Crisis counselors have been provided for any students, staff, or construction workers who may have witnessed the accident. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Borrego Springs has lost a major philanthropist. Bill Wright has passed away at age 88. The Borrego Sun describes Wright as a champion of all things good in Borrego Springs. Wright and his wife Jenny moved to Borrego Springs from Santa Barbara in 1980, drawn by the desert community's natural beauty. They bought the Roadrunner Club RV Park and later built the Springs at Borrego, a high-end RV retreat, which they continued to operate until selling both properties in 2017. The Wrights have given back generously to the community, supporting a wealth of charitable endeavors and projects to benefit the public. Together, they started the town's iconic Circle of Art celebration of desert art and the environment, held each year on Christmas Circle in the heart of Borrego Springs. Bill Wright and his family also donated 26 acres to benefit the community. The site includes the newly opened Borrego Springs branch of the county library. In addition, he designed, financed, and built the Springs Dog Park in the community. Last year, Wright hosted a thank you party and concert for the community at the Borrego Springs Performing Arts Center. Most recently, in May, the Wrights commissioned a feasibility study to build a full-service senior center surrounded by senior housing to meet the needs of Borrego's aging residents. Known for introducing himself as the Sunday Gardener to campers at his properties, Bill Wright voiced gratitude to all upon announcing sale of his RV parks to Good Life Communities in 2017. In a farewell message in the Springs at Borrego newsletter, he quoted Bob Hope's famous show-ending line stating, "Thanks for the memories." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gerald Stevenson.
Farm workers groups are celebrating the end of at least a decade-long battle to ban a toxic pesticide in California after the state EPA announced a new deal with manufacturers of chlorpyrifos. The pesticide will no longer be sold to growers in California after February 6, 2020. Naimin Martinez, director of the Central California Environmental Justice Network, says studies have linked chlorpyrifos to serious health effects in kids.
It's a very dangerous chemical that can cause harm, especially in brain development for unborn children and young children who live in close proximity where this pesticide is applied.
Chlorpyrifos is widely used to control pests on a variety of crops, including alfalfa, almonds, citrus, cotton, grapes, and walnuts. Farmers can still spray their existing stocks through the end of next year as long as they respect buffer zones. The state has dedicated $5 million for grant money to search for an environmentally friendly alternative. In 2016, under President Barack Obama, the U.S. EPA had decided to ban chlorpyrifos nationwide. But President Donald Trump's first EPA director, Scott Pruitt, reversed the decision against the advice of the agency's scientists. Martinez notes that Dow Chemical, a chlorpyrifos manufacturer, donated $1 million to the Trump inauguration.
Dow was one of the main contributors to Trump's administration funds. So it's not surprising that at the federal level, this didn't happen, more for a political reason than anything else.
Martinez says rural Fresno, Kern, and Tulare counties are the top users of chlorpyrifos in the state, with especially high usage near the Central Valley towns of Lindsay, Orange Cove, and Tranquility. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.